This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, on December the 23rd, 1996, a body was found in West Cork. It was the body of Sophie Toscan de Plantier, a French woman who had a holiday home in a remote part of West Cork. She had been the victim of a brutal attack, and it was the following morning at 10 a.m. when her body was first found. She had been badly beaten to death. This crime has never been solved, and it has been one of the most notorious crimes and intriguing in many ways that we've seen ever in this country. There have been a number of documentaries made about it. A very successful podcast, Jim Sheridan, former Oscar-nominated director, made his own documentary, a television documentary about it. And our guest this morning, Mick Clifford, special correspondent of the Irish Examiner, went to Paris in 2019, where Ian Bailey, a freelance journalist from the area in West Cork, was sentenced to 25 years in prison. He was sentenced in absentia because the Irish authorities would not extradite him to France legal advice. Mick went to that trial, which was, I think we'll find out, a bit of a farce. And Mick joins us now. Mick, thank you very much for joining us, because it was announced this weekend that the Gardaí are going to do what's called a cold case review of this West Cork murder, which means on the recommendation of John O'Driscoll, the assistant commissioner, who is retiring. He is the person most responsible for tackling organised crime successfully, CAB, the Kinahan cartel, and all of the rest of them. He is retiring, but he made one recommendation before he retired. He suggested a cold case team be assigned to identify lines of inquiry that may have been missed by the original team. Mick, this is a lingering notoriety, if you like, particularly around Ian Bailey, who is a former journalist, and we'll come to him. It's unsolved. And let's just start with the trial in absentia that you attended in Paris, where Bailey was sentenced to 25 years in prison. That was a highly unsatisfactory event, wasn't it?
Yes, Eamon, I think that's very fair to say. I mean, you know, there has been what you might call suspicion, perhaps, swirling around Ian Bailey, or there certainly was in the early days. He was arrested in early January 1997, some weeks after Mr. Plantier's body was found. And he quickly, I think, I don't know exactly who's responsible, but he quickly became identified as the chief suspect following that arrest. And I think that the morning after he was released, he actually was on the radio, identifying him as such, I think, on a program Pat Kenny used to have on RT1. So, I mean, from then on, there was... Now, there was a number of developments then over the years that suggested that the investigation that effectively identified him as the chief suspect was highly flawed. And we can deal with various aspects of that, including a very crucial analysis by somebody in the DPP's office in 2001. Yes. Notwithstanding that, because the DPP in this country had decided on more than one occasion that the evidence was not there to prosecute, an investigation was opened by the French under an ancient Napoleonic law that they could investigate at the death of a French citizen abroad. The culmination of all of that was, as you said, a trial in 2019 in Paris. And I attended there along with a few other Irish journalists. And I think, as you said, Eamon, there was something, I don't know whether it's fair to call it farcical, but it was certainly highly unsatisfactory. What we had was evidence that was secondhand, that was what would be considered hearsay in this country, and various conclusions drawn and that type of thing. And to my eyes at the time, it appeared more like what you might call a confirmatory hearing on guilt rather than a trial to see whether the evidence pointed towards the guilt of an individual. Following that, as you say, that was conducted, by the way, over the course of 4 days. There was a verdict then after the three judges considered it for a number of hours and then handed down a 25-year sentence. Since then, there was an attempt on the basis of that verdict by the French to have him extradited. That, by the way, was the third time they attempted to have him extradited, albeit in 2019. On this occasion, they then had what they considered a guilty verdict in a murder trial. The High Court here rejected that once more. So that was the culmination of that process.
Now, there were some reasons why Bailey was a suspect in the first instance. One of them was from a woman. I think she owned a small shop in Skull, and she had been having an affair, actually, and she was in this remote area where this murder took place, and she identified Bailey. She subsequently changed her mind on that. There was also questions about the behaviour of the police. Frank Buttermer is a very good solicitor in the area, and he has defended Bailey. But there were other things. For example, there were scratches on his hands and his face, which he said he got from plucking a turkey and putting up a Christmas tree. But the key, I suppose, witness was Jules Thomas, who is now Bailey's former girlfriend. They were in a long-term relationship. They were partners. And she gave in Bailey an alibi for the night. Now, the way this was presented in Sunday Times at the weekend, the headline was Bailey's ex to aid cold case review of West Cork murder. The inference being that she was now going to give evidence, new evidence. But these circumstantial matters are sort of negated by certain other things that happened, such as Bailey going to a police station, offering his blood and offering to do a DNA test at the time.
Yeah, and I think it's also fair to say that, you know, there's a number of reasons why this cold case review is being conducted, including contact from Ms. Duplantier's son, Pierre-Louis, who's looking for a further investigation on the basis of failure to extradite him. But it's also the case that Ian Bailey has written to the Garda Commissioner asking for a new investigation on the basis, as he sees it, that he wants to clear his name. It should be stated, as you said, Eamon, any evidence that there was against him, and we must always remember that the DPP has decided on a number of occasions that whatever evidence there was, it did not come anywhere near a threshold to bring charges. But any such evidence that might have been suggested that he was involved was entirely circumstantial. There was absolutely no forensic evidence to that effect. And of that circumstantial evidence, without one element, I'd suggest that it would be entirely flimsy altogether. And that element is the evidence of the woman you mentioned, Maria Farrell.
Yes.
And initially, she claimed that on the night of the murder at a place called Kielfada Bridge, which is about a mile and a half, I think, from where Mr. Duplantier's holiday home was. And pretty much, I followed the trail around. It was pretty much the same from where Ian Bailey was living at the time. But she claims initially that on the night in question, she saw an individual there who matched Ian Bailey's description at 2 a.m. As you said, the circumstances were, I think she said she was meeting a man, as they say in ancient parlance, who was not her husband. and that was one of the reasons she didn't want to come forward. Now, even within that, there were issues, because initially she described a man, I think, who was about 5'9" or 5'10". And subsequently this grew because Mr. Bailey happens to be 6'2". And this man also had a long black coat and what have you. And that seems to have been a catalyst for the Gardaí finger, Mr. Bailey. Now, move that forward. 2002, there's a libel action taken by Mr. Bailey against 8 newspapers in Cork Circuit Court. That was there was explosive evidence in that from Maria Farrell and others that, albeit this is a civil court, there's explosive evidence that what you might say could be considered as having been part of a case that could have been raised against Mr. Bailey. But her evidence was crucial in that, and she repeated that thing of seeing the person she suspected was Mr. Bailey. Within a couple of years, she had completely changed her evidence. Yeah, and
that she had been pressured by the guards?
Yeah, that was her change of mind. Now, take into account, she had, of her own free will and in some detail, given evidence under oath to a different effect, and now she was saying that evidence was effectively a pack of lies. So immediately an issue arises about her credibility. Now, she is also in the frame, in the current layout, as you might have it, in that she, following the 2 documentaries we had recently, she's reportedly come forward and now states that she did see an individual at Kilfada Bridge, but the description now matches somebody whom she says may be associated with Mr. Plantier's late husband, or at least be from France in some capacity or other. So, you know, you'd have to say by any standards, on the basis of her various declarations, that Miss Farrell, whatever else one may say, and she may be a perfectly upstanding individual, but the credibility of her evidence on the basis of the various positions she's taken is not very good by any standards.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Now, Mick, one of the turning points in all of this mystery was the libel cases that Bailey took against the 8 newspapers. He lost, and that was almost taken as being guilt by failure to prove libel had been committed against him. It was certainly a setback, and we must remember we're going back 25, 26 years here. So he is an odd bod, Bailey. I don't know if you've, have you interviewed him or spoken to him?
Oh, I have a number of times, yeah.
And when I say he's an odd bod, everyone's entitled to be eccentric in a certain kind of way. But you could argue that Frank Buttermer, his solicitor, has saved him from himself. It must be said, though, he did turn up at Bandon Garda Station when he was first mentioned in relation to this. And he gave his fingerprints. He had a DNA test. And there was no forensic evidence that would convict him. But then again, one of the key pieces of evidence is that Miss de Plantier was murdered when a concrete block was dropped on her head. That concrete block is still in possession of Garda Síochána and may well be a factor now in terms of DNA or whatever.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that. I mean, it should also be said that, and I have to just, you mentioned that and the circumstances of the poor woman's death. I mean, in that trial in Paris, they put up on the screen there in the courtroom photographs of the scene and of Mr. Plantier's body. Now, these are the kind of photographs that normally in a murder trial in this country, and I've attended many of those, you know, the public don't see. They're just handed over to the jury. But I have to say it was chilling, shocking, the sight of the woman's body and the condition that whomever assaulted her had left her in. It was really appalling. But from that scene, there was also a gate. Now, you know, a standard corrugated iron gate. You'd see them there as you're driving along the country entry into fields and what have you. That gate somehow disappeared in Garda custody. Really? Someone said, how do you lose a gate? But anyway, that's one of a number of anomalies in the case. But overall, the forensic element of things, now notwithstanding huge advances in DNA since 1996, there's no indication as of yet that forensically there will be anything in this cold case review that might be, so to speak, a smoking gun or whatever. It's possible, but from everything I can determine at the moment, it doesn't seem very likely. I think perhaps the investigating Gardaí are placing more store and more hope in somebody coming forward with some new evidence. Now, one issue around that, cold case reviews happen. We've seen them happen here and in other jurisdictions. And when they do turn up something, it's major news because you're talking about something new after 20, 25 years and suddenly this happens. And there have been convictions in this jurisdiction as a result of that. However, as against that, in this case, you have to remember this is not something that happened 26 years ago now and there's an investigation and that was the end of it and we heard no more for 26 years. In various guises, this has been parsed and examined by civil courts, by the French authorities, by the DPP, going over it again and again, by a very detailed assessment from the DPP's office. So on the whole, I would suggest that probably makes it less likely of a breakthrough. However, there is no doubt that there are situations whereby something new does come to light. And as I say, in this instance, I'd suggest that the Gardaí are relying on it being some individual somewhere who may not have come forward or who may not have thought it was necessary to come forward or that they had nothing to add to the picture. I'd suggest that that is the route that the Gardaí are placing most store in attempting to get a result this time around.
Yes, and interestingly, the Sunday Times piece by John Mooney on Sunday, which revealed the cold case review, begins with the observation that Jules Thomas, Bailey's former partner and girlfriend, is to assist Gardaí in their fresh investigation into the murder. There is another important intervention here, Mick. When it appeared likely that he could be extradited, because there was an extradition case heard in the courts here to examine the feasibility of an extradition, a former director of public prosecutions, Barnes is his name, took the very unusual step of writing a long and detailed letter about the case, warning against extraditing Bailey on the grounds that in that DPP piece opinion, he was not guilty.
Yeah, and this was
and the procedures that had him where he was were not safe.
Yeah, and I'm to be honest with you, there's been some attempt, I can't remember, it was the first or second attempt. I think it might have been the first attempt on which the French tried to extradite it, and the High Court assented to the extradition. So yes, you had the scenario then that it looked like Ian Bailey was to be extradited and was coming before the Supreme Court. And there was that intervention from the former DPP. And around the same time, and from this remove, I can't remember whether it originated with that gentleman or how it came to light, but I remember it ended up online, what have you. What came to light was this analysis, a 40-page analysis that had been done by an officer or a member of the DPP's office. Robert Sheehan was the man's name, back in 2001. Now, this was a very detailed analysis of the case.
Yes.
And in it, he went into some detail in pointing out the various flaws there had been. For example, on the basis he suggested that that the Gardaí had put it about that this man, Mr. Bailey, was a danger and that it was quite possible he would offend again in a violent manner. Now,
yes,
the DPP, the analysis made the point, you know, when you do that sort of thing, you immediately change a mood perhaps in a community and a willingness among a community to perhaps come forward with something that may not have a lot of credibility.
Yes.
If, for example, they're under fear of an individual, whatever, you know, that's just one example. But there was a number of examples there that he went through how the initial investigation had been so flawed. And what I found interesting about it, Eamon, was in one or two places, this lawyer made reference to Mr. Bailey's innocence. Now, that, to me, goes way beyond what a DPP would normally decide.
Yes.
On. They decide on whether there's enough evidence to pursue a case. But this really came across in a way that suggested that there was a belief, certainly in this man, that there was no way that this guy could have been in the frame. As against that, it has to be said, senior Gardaí have disputed a lot that was in that, but the specific rebuttal of some of that wasn't very clear. But there's no doubt that I think that analysis had a huge impact on the public as much as anything, because remember, the public opinion in this, it has been a very high profile case, and somebody's, yes, made a point recently, a very valid point. This is an awful murder of a woman, but there have been numerous other women who've been murdered since, for which nobody's been convicted, and we haven't concentrated on that. That's more to do with modern culture and what have you, that kind of thing. But it has to be said that the public opinion shifted as a result of that and a few other things along the way. Because back, that libel trial you mentioned,
yes,
I attended it back in Cork. At that time, I think it's safe to say that there was a view among the public that Mr. Bailey was guilty as hell. But we now know that the perceptions and the so-called evidence on which that was based was definitely flawed.
Yes. Now, I suppose the key to this cold case, or one of the keys, this cold case investigation, will be Jules Thomas, the former partner of Ian Bailey. She provided the alibi for the night, an alibi that was cast iron, that Ian Bailey was with her at home and had not travelled the distance and back that he would have had to travel to commit this crime. Now, the fact that she and Bailey are no longer partners seems to me to be the most, because John Mooney writes in the Sunday Times that she is prepared to assist this cold case re-examination. That seems one interesting and, you would think, definitive way of establishing whether Bailey could or could not have committed a crime. The other one is the police behaviour. There was somebody, a man who was, I think, living on the streets and a homeless man. They were alleged to have given alcohol and cannabis to this man in order to provide damning evidence against Bailey. So the behaviour of the police in West Cork may have been questionable as well, and certainly was questioned.
Yeah, and I'm just dealing with Miss Thomas, first of all. I mean, it has to be said that she, along with Ian Bailey, she has always said that she'd cooperate with any new investigation.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, when Mr. Bailey wrote to the commissioner, he made the point that both of them and their solicitor, Frank Buttermore, as you mentioned, would all cooperate. There is, as you said, in terms of their personal circumstances, that has changed in the last couple of years. But it should also be stated that there is no indication.
None at all.
That Mr. Thomas would have any intention of changing her evidence whatsoever. And that piece you mentioned, the Sunday Times, I think in the detail of it, there was no indication in any of that either whatsoever. So, but I mean, people are going to speculate in various things inevitably. In regard to the Gardaí, there's no question that was the case, Eamon. There was a young man, he was at the time, but he certainly was somebody who was didn't have a permanent address in that, and he was known to Mr. Bailey, and there was that interaction with the Gardaí. There was all sorts of cloak and dagger stuff. There was definitely, I think, cannabis given to him, and there was a suggestion that he was being induced to get Bailey to confess. Not only that, but in an investigation into phone tapping that originated in this case, that turned out to be a national thing, there was suggested that the judge who sat on the tribunal said that some calls would suggest that there was an intention to pursue Bailey in that manner. He didn't say definitively that it had happened. But I suppose it also has to be put in slightly different context too, and that is 1996, West Cork, a violent murder for whom there is no obvious suspect. I mean,
yes,
that was really, I don't know, the first time, some people suggest, going back to the War of Independence, when you had anything of this nature there, and therefore whether, quite obviously, the local Gardaí would not be accustomed to it, and whether they were equipped to deal with the matter properly. And then you had a few other things, particularly the pathologist at the time was 24 hours late through no fault of his own. He was overworked and dealing with other cases. So there was, and there was issues like, for example, people were allowed to cross over the crime scene in the hours after. There was a lot of things like that that added up to ensure that it certainly wasn't a rigorous investigation. One other element there that has been cited a few times, and that was once the spotlight came on Mr. Bailey, and this, I think, is a fault of other guard investigations too, immediately all other avenues of inquiry in terms of possible suspects were closed down, and the concentration was on Mr. Bailey, despite what in retrospect seems like relatively flimsy evidence. So that was another fault with it as well at the time. And between all that, you know, all of that has added to the controversy around this case and how it was investigated from day one.
And finally, Mick, it should be pointed out that Mr. Bailey has welcomed this cold case review. And indeed, last week it emerged, well, in fact, Mr. Bailey announced that he was selling T-shirts bearing his image to finance a podcast he plans to make on the case. But he welcomed, as I say, the cold case review. Jim Sheridan made a 5-part Sky documentary, Murder at the Cottage, and there was a very successful podcast, West Cork, and there was also two other TV series, one of them on Netflix. Yeah. Bailey is, as I said before, an odd bod, but there's no evidence that we can rely on, is there, that he's a murderer? And there is some suggestion that perhaps Sophie Tuscan de Plantier was murdered by someone known to her from France.
That's been around, Damon, definitely. And you describe Ian Bailey as an odd bod. I think that's a very neutral way of putting it indeed, because he is certainly somebody, let me put it this way, that some might find difficulty in sympathising or empathising with him. Yeah. He's also somebody...
He reported on the case for the Sunday Tribune, Mick, where I believe you used to work.
Absolutely, not only that, he also reported...
And I worked.
I still recall, I was actually working in the Star in Christmas 1996, and I still recall subbing, I was a sub-editor, subbing his copy, and I still recall one day the news editor looking up and saying, Jesus Christ, this fella who was filing for us is a suspect, you know, and it was quite a shock at the time. But he is, he is somebody who, let's say, he's not afraid to let his ego blossom. And he's been eccentric and what have you, and he enjoys the spotlight. Now, you mentioned the two documentaries, and what is interesting, I think, about them is that you've the Sky one with Jim Sheridan, you've the Netflix one, the other one made. In their own way, they came down on the opposite sides of the fence, so to speak,
right,
as to whether or not Mr. Bailey has any case to answer. Jim Sheridan's one was relatively sympathetic to Bailey, and Mr. Plantier's family, I think, withdrew cooperation at one stage from it on the basis they felt that, whereas the Netflix one seemed to focus very much on Ian Bailey, and he attempted to have parts he'd played in it to be cut out. I think he was unsuccessful in that, but they came down on opposite sides. The podcast you mentioned, West Cork, excellent podcast that was very neutral, I have to say, and gave a great picture thing along. But all of that has, of course, added to the spotlight on the case, and I would suggest that also, along with the conviction and the fallout from it in Paris in 2019, allied to the communications from both Ian Bailey and Mr. Plantier's son to the Garda Commissioner, when you put all that into the mix, that all ultimately, I think, led to the decision for this cold case review. And we'll just have to wait and see whether anything can actually come out of it.
Okay, well, it's an extraordinary story. It's a saga, really, and we'll see what happens when this case is reviewed. May Mr. Plantier rest in peace. And if there are elements of this that we found humorous, in tragedy, there's often a touch of farce as well. We're very grateful to Mick Clifford, special correspondent with the Irish Examiner, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.